You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. I'm Paul Severino today, joined by LaTroy Hawkins. Going to start out the podcast with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, where we discuss three topics that interest us. We're going to start the podcast by discussing the return of the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry as both teams aim for the playoffs in the last seven or so weeks of the regular season. Also, the return of Rockies starter Chad Bettis. And we'll finish up the Triple Play by weighing in on how close Major League Baseball might be to going to an automated strike zone.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play.
Over the weekend, the Yankees lost 2 of 3 to the Boston Red Sox. This rivalry was, for me, LaTroy, at its peak in the early part of the 2000s. Obviously, 03, a 7-game series. The walk-off home run in the American League Championship Series with Aaron Boone to send the Yanks to the World Series again. And then, of course, 2004, the Yankees blew a 3-games-to-none lead. The first and so far only time we've seen that in Major League Baseball. Red Sox won the 4 in a row. They won the World Series, their first since 1918. And then a bit of a lull. Even though there have been good teams along the way, the Red Sox won in 07. They won in 13 as well. And then the New York Yankees won in 2009. But right now, we're at the, I think, the beginning of the next chapter of this rivalry with a lot of young players on both sides. What do you make of how this rivalry is evolving in 2017?
It's been everything we expected of, you know, early on when we first started doing the interleague play. I mean, when we first started, the Yankees started on their whole little streak. Red Sox finally got, you know, good. But, you know, I don't think any of the teams had the young talent when they first started out, you know, early back in the late 90s like the teams now. Both teams have incredible young talent. I know the Yankees had Derek Jeter, and you know the Red Sox had their guys, Pedroia and all them. But man, the guys that they have now: Mookie Betts, Aaron Judge, Sanchez, Jackie Bradley Jr., Devers. I mean, it's some very good baseball, and in both those towns. And all they're doing is, you know, adding kerosene into the American League East, you know, pennant race, and may the best team win. Or the best team that's playing the best at the right time win.
Correct. I agree. You're someone who partook in this rivalry a little bit in your career, but again, there wasn't as much, it seemed, hatred, and I'll admit this solely for the purposes of this conversation. Okay, so we'll just put it out there. Yankee fan growing up. And I went to school a little north of Boston, Endicott College, and I was in school. I was a junior in 03. I was a senior in 2004. And there was a lot of hatred back then. Now, perhaps that was just because of some of the activities that college students may partake in. But it seemed like that kind of died down a little bit. And it was, you know, certainly some respect out there, but not as much of that hatred. And it's starting to feel like it's maybe good-natured hatred at this point, but that it's kind of back right now. And it's a fierce rivalry. There's a strong dislike with these two teams and these two fan bases. And what it was in 03 and 04 was something that, again, with the Red Sox drought of World Series championships for so long, I don't think that you can duplicate it. But like I said before, with all of the young players that are on both sides, you'd think the young promising players on both sides, you'd think that these two teams are going to battle for a division. Certainly this year, Yankees with a victory, Red Sox lost on Monday. So that's now down to 4.5 games and a lot of baseball to be played. The Cardinals are in Boston this week for a few, and the Yankees get the Mets. So this, what started as a 5.5 game difference on Monday morning, could look a lot different if things continue to get interesting. So, you know, it's fun to watch. Did you feel it when you played for the Yankees in 2008, right?
Yes. I mean,
did you feel the rivalry?
Yeah, when you're a part of the either one of those franchises, and when they're playing against each other, you feel the what is that, the tension coming from the fans. I don't, not so much from the players. I think from the players' perspective, it really amped up when A-Rod got into the fight with Veritek. I think that kind of like catapulted that whole rivalry with those two teams. And, you know, with the players, it usually just fizzles away. You know, we're going out there to play no matter who we're playing. It doesn't have to be a rival. The players don't look at it as a rival. They look at it as another team that we need to beat. But for the fan base, it's a rival. I mean, I remember that I think the Steinbrenner banned shirts that had any kind of derogatory statements on it about, you know, the Red Sox. And I remember they had that shirt. They had the shirt at Fenway. Jeter blows and A-Rod swallows or something. It was one of those crazy shirts. And I was like, I'm glad they would never let them wear that at Yankee Stadium. It was something to the fact. But they had all kind of crazy stuff like that. So the fans make the rival more intense. And with these two incredible fan bases, I mean, this thing, we hadn't even seen the tipping point of this yet.
No, it's I'm glad you went there. That was a bold move, LaTroy. It was good for you. but yeah, you know, it's fun to watch right now. And again, it's a lot better when the two teams are good. And again, it gets a lot of attention. It's, you ask around, and I would think most people would say that it's the best rivalry in baseball. But you also, no disrespect to the Cubs and the Cardinals, and right now those two teams are good, separated by a game at the start of the play. The Giants and the Dodgers is always fun to watch, even though this year the Dodgers are just world beaters and the Giants have one of the worst records in baseball. It's always different when the rivals get together. It's a different juice. A lot of times you can throw the records out the window.
Exactly.
But when both teams are good, it makes it that much better and that much more entertaining.
I remember in 2013 when I was with the Mets and the Yankees were, record-wise, they were a lot better than us. And we literally, four games, kicked them and punched them right in the face. Four games in 2013. It was like, wow, why we can't do this every night? But, you know, it just raised the bar when you play in the Subway Series. Something about it. Something about it.
Yeah, so right now the Yankees certainly have their issues injury-wise in their rotation, and Tanaka is banged up, and CeCe's banged up, and you know, they're certainly not at 100%. They've lost Michael Pineda to Tommy John surgery, and in what is in all likelihood his last go-around with the New York Yankees. So but the Red Sox right now are rolling, and they're a team that they've got arguably the Cy Young and maybe even the MVP, according to some, at least in mid-August, in Chris Sale. It's a 4.5-game cushion as we speak, but still 7 weeks to go. Do you think that the AL East finishes with the Red Sox in first and the Yankees in second?
Oh, that's a great question, and I guess since I'm in this seat, I have to actually answer a question like that. But, you know, and Ryan's going to be upset at me, but it's okay. I'm going to go ahead and say it, that our producer, the Red Sox, even though they're playing the Cardinals, and Cardinals coming in town, they're pretty hot right now. And then the Yankees have, you know, a couple more with the lonely Mets right now, and it looks like they're going to gain some ground. But, you know, just the Red Sox have a lot of weapons over there. And if they need to win a ball game, you just put Chris Sale on the mound. I mean, like you said, Cy Young, possibly MVP, what he's done this year, 240 strikeouts, and we got 7 more weeks. We got about 10 more starts to go. He's going to surpass 300 strikeouts.
Yeah, we don't see that very often.
No, I think the last time we saw it was 99, and Pedro Martinez did it, and I was in the league at that time, and I didn't pay any attention to it. I'm mad at myself when I saw that stat the other day. I'm like, how did I miss this? 300 strikeouts? That's incredible.
Well, I mean, it's you know, it's like 10 a start, and there's a lot of strikeouts going around Major League Baseball right now. There's no doubt about it, but still 300 strikeouts in a single season, that is a big number. That's a big number for Chris Sale, and he's staring it right in the face right now, but however this thing shakes out in the East, it's bound to be fun between the Red Sox and the Yankees. A couple of snatch-em-back victories for the Yankees on Friday, the Red Sox on Sunday, and all Boston on Saturday as the Red Sox took 2 of 3. One of the big headlines going into Monday night was the return, of course, of Chad Bettis, a guy who's been a big part of this rotation in years past, but he made his first big league start since September 30th of 2016 after overcoming testicular cancer, which was first diagnosed last November. He then had to undergo chemotherapy in March when a routine screening revealed that the cancer had spread to his lymph nodes. So this tonight, Monday night, his first big league start since last September. His wife Christina was there, including their baby daughter, who was born last March 29th, 9 days after Chad started the chemotherapy. So as we've talked about throughout the evening, whether you're a Rockies fan, they're playing the Braves. If you like the Braves, if you like baseball, it doesn't matter. If you've got a compassionate bone in your body, or you know someone who's gone through and fought cancer, then this was the guy, and this was the inspirational story for you. He went out there tonight, gave up a leadoff triple, by the way. A ball that went all the way to the wall. Gerardo Parra tried to make the catch, rolls to the wall. Parra gets to it, throws to Trevor Story. Story throws home, gets Ender Inciarte, cuts off the game's first run, the first batter of the game. And Bettis goes on to throw 7 scoreless innings, 6 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts. Pitching aside, LaTroy Hawkins, what do you make of just the entire journey of this kid just to get back to this point? And he pitched well, but even if he didn't, just to get back to this point, what do you make of it?
Just knowing Chad Bettis personally, playing with him his rookie year, speaking to him after he was diagnosed the first time with the testicular cancer, and just – being up close and personal with it, and just seeing him back out there on the mound. I was texting one of our other teammates around, Ryan Spielborough, who does TV for the Rockies, during our time we've been on the air, and I said, what an amazing night. And Spilly texted me back. He said, dude, at the beginning of the game, he said he was sobbing like a baby because, once again, like we've said before, Paul, it's bigger than baseball, man. His life was on the line. And people said, well, his life was on the line. He was going through chemo, taking radiation. And now he's back out there competing at a very high level, doing what he enjoys doing. And that's, pitching at the highest level you can pitch at. And it just shows you his, his perseverance and his mindset that, he wasn't going to let cancer beat him. And he went out there and showed us tonight that, I don't care what kind of obstacles, what kind of, whatever situation you're in your life, you just keep fighting. You just got to keep fighting. And he fought, and he fought his way back to the major leagues.
Yeah, he set career highs in 2016, leading the Rockies in wins with 14, starts with 32, and innings with 186. So he's... He one of the elder statesmen at 28 years old, but a leader, no matter his age, a leader of that pitching staff. And we've seen earlier this season, of course, the Colorado Rockies have their spring training complex, Salt River Fields, a talking stick, just outside Scottsdale, Arizona. So earlier this season, when the Rockies were playing the Diamondbacks in Phoenix, Bettis, who was undergoing the treatment and also trying his best to work out and stay in some form of baseball shape, he visited the Colorado Rockies when they were playing the Diamondbacks. And when that happened, it was such an inspirational story. I had a chance to talk with Charlie Blackman and right around that time, a week or two after that had happened. And he said that it really lifted the spirits of the entire team. But even though he has not been with the club, Chad Bettis, that is, not been with the club for a bulk of this season, he hadn't been far away at all. I mean, he'd been texting and calling and watching every single game as he worked his way back, as I said before, not just to baseball shape, but just worked his way back to a general health as well. And to kind of put himself aside to make sure that he, you know, stayed up to speed with what the Rockies were doing as a team, to stay up to speed with what individuals were doing on his pitching staff. I think it really speaks to the character of this guy. And, we joke about it all the time. We're not supposed to root for anybody in this business, but this was an easy one for me to root for tonight for Chad Bettis. And I know I'm not alone with that, but you've obviously been part of that fraternity and that group of a pitching staff, and certainly of a baseball team to a bigger scale. But when a guy is away from the club, I would imagine that it's very easy to feel not a part of the team. And for Bettis to reach out and still be such a big part, I'm not sure if you've ever seen anything like that before.
Well, when you're on a DL and you kind of feel a little alienated because you're not doing anything to help the team win. That's how you feel. And, you know, he kept himself, you know, in tune with what was going on with the Rockies. And that's huge. And I'm almost positive, you know, that helped him get through the fight that he had to fight. It helped him get through it, knowing that his teammates were behind him, the organization was behind him. And, you know, a lot of times that helps you. That helps you with the recovery process and helps you, you know, beat, you know, what you have to fight against. And, you know, Bettis is one of those tough Texas guys. He's just a tough Texas guy, you know, from Lubbock. Went to Texas Tech, a Red Raider. He's scrappy. And, you know, when he was diagnosed, he told us, you know, I'm not going to let this beat me. You know, I got my boxing gloves on. I got my best fastball, and I'm going to give cancer my best fastball. And he has a pretty good fastball.
Yeah, absolutely does. It was on display tonight. Again, 7 scoreless, 6 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts. Did not figure in the decision, but the Rockies scored their runs after he had left the ballgame. This is a Rockies team that will also get Kyle Freeland back on Tuesday. So they're still in the thick of things in that wild card race at the start of play on Monday, even with the Arizona Cardinals and 4.5 games clear of the St. Louis, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, rather, and 4.5 games clear of the St. Louis Cardinals for that wild card. So good to have Chad Bettis back, an inspirational story, Rockies fan or not. Again, if you've got a compassionate bone in your body or know someone who's battled through cancer, this was an inspirational story for the ages. Chad Bettis with 7 scoreless in his season debut in 2017. Over the weekend in Arizona, there was a questionable final strike call on Ben Zobrist. It was a big breaking ball from David Hernandez, and it looked like it had been caught about 2 inches from the ground. But I would make the argument that that's not where the strike zone is. That's the catching zone. The strike zone is where the hitting zone is, therefore out in front of home plate. And it was just below the zone in terms of the pitch trackers and everything else, but it looked a lot worse when it was caught. However, LaTroy Hawkins, that has begun the conversation about we should really implement an automated strike zone into Major League Baseball. The technology is getting there. It may not be all the way there, but just in terms of having played so long in the big leagues, do you think that that is something that A, will be in the game, B, should be in the game, and C, would you be okay with it?
I'll start at C. I wouldn't be okay with it. My mother told me a long time ago when I was a little bitty boy, when I first started playing baseball, she said the umpire doesn't have a home team. So wherever they are, you know, they're on the road, and anything they do is going to be criticized one way or another. But I mean, I think that's what makes the beauty of baseball, because we still have some kind of human element in it. And for an umpire to call a strike that he thought was a strike and it was a ball in our eyes, I mean, that's part of baseball. That's part of who we are. I mean, we still play the game with the human element. We still have a human element. I do not like the instant replay. I don't. It just makes umpires look bad when they're right. 98% of the time, it makes them look bad. And believe me, I've had my run-ins with umpires. But at the end of the day, you know, they're very good at their jobs. And just because he blew one call, you can't go a whole season or a whole game without blowing a call. I mean, how many times you say an umpire, you know, he called a perfect game. Well, it was perfect because none of the calls went against your team, probably. But, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, let the umpires do what they do. I mean, they say this guy's bad. Everybody talked about, oh, what's his name? The black umpire. Oh, God.
Laz Diaz?
Nope. No.
C.B. Buckner.
C.B. Buckner. C.B., worst umpire. He's rated every year as the worst umpire. Well, my outlook on that is he's consistently bad. So at the end of the day, I can accept that. And I've heard players say this. If he's consistently bad for both sides, you can accept that because then you have to make the adjustment.
Right.
Players don't like umpires that, you know, okay, we're bad for this team, we're not bad for that team, or every inning they're switching the strike zone. You know, so one inning this is a strike, the next inning it's a ball. Players don't like that. So when you talk about C.B. Buckner being the worst umpire, I thought he wasn't bad at all because he was consistent. That's all players want is consistency from the umpires.
Right. A strike in the first should be a strike in the fifth, should be a strike in the ninth.
No matter who's hitting or pitching.
Correct. Right. I get that. And again, as someone who only had dreams of playing in the big leagues, never actually doing it, and certainly not for as long as you did, I would say that for a long time, I still consider myself an old school type baseball fan. I like the analytics as much as the next guy, but certainly not more than the next guy. That's for darn sure. But you know, I still think that there's something to the win, and it's more of a you know, an emotional type thing than an actual statistical thing. But I think whether you're an old school or a new school type fan, no one is looking just solely at the win column to figure out whether or not a pitcher had a good game or not. And again, there's not many. There's a few. There's no doubt about it. But there's not many 20 game winners in a season that had a bad year. There's certainly not a lot of 300 game winners that had bad careers. On a given night, you know, on a given night, the win may not tell the whole story. But so anyway, long story long, I consider myself an old school type fan. But I am starting to come around on this automated strike zone thing because I don't think that it's going to take away any jobs from umpires. You would still need an umpire to be behind home plate. Balls need to get, you know, thrown out of play or put back in play so many times. So if nothing else, they're throwing the ball back to the pitcher or giving it to the catcher. They're making calls, I'd say, for out at home. They could probably get a better look at check swings if they're not worried so much about the strike zone itself. And one thing that Cole Hamels brought up, I believe he was quoted in USA Today in the spring. I think I'm right on that. If not, I apologize. But Cole Hamels said, if you want to speed up the pace of play, implement the automated strike zone. And I'm thinking to myself, how in heaven's name is one connected to the other?
Oh,
and then, of course, I read more, and he said, well, here's the thing. If I throw a pitch that's on the edge, that's called a ball, well, now I'm huffing and puffing on the mound because I think I just threw a strike and it wasn't. So now I'm upset. Flip side of that, if I throw a pitch that's just off the edge and it gets called a strike and the hitter's not happy with it, he's huffing and puffing around home plate and he's taking up time and slowing the pace of play down. So from that perspective, and we've certainly talked an awful lot about pace of play in the last couple of years, so from that perspective, yes, and the technology is not perfected yet. I heard Tom Verducci earlier on Monday on MLB Network talk about that, and Tom's as locked in as anyone. He said it's getting there, but it's not quite there, and that's certainly something that needs to be perfect before it's implemented. And I know that Eric Burns, another one of my cohorts over at MLB Network, knows the folks who do the technology. Knows them very well and has tried it at the minor league level the last couple of years, or independent league level the last couple of years, and it happens pretty instantaneously. Ball is thrown, pop of the mitt, maybe a tick after that, a second or so after that, and then boom, red light, ball, green light, strike, and the umpire can say ball or strike, and all of that kind of happens rather quickly. So from that perspective, and if it would stop us from arguing balls and strikes and everybody's upset and this guy stinks and that guy stinks, it's just like, because I'm kind of sick of the minutia of making the umpires such a big deal in that sense. Like, let them do their job, but let's help them make their job easier. That's what I think.
Okay. Wow. That was a little long-winded, Paul.
Sorry.
It's okay. Good job. I love it. But I just, the whole, nothing's perfect. I don't care how much they talk about this new, whatever it is, automated ball strike system. It's not going to be perfect. You can't make it perfect. So if you can't make it perfect, why not keep the human element in the game if you can't make it perfect? Because if you do this, it has to be 100%. Another thing, who develops the strike zone? Who develops that? Major League Baseball, you let the players develop. I mean, who develops the strike zone?
Whatever I think what happened is that they would go back, they would figure out where the strike zone is. You want to say
nobody knows.
Nobody knows, but you want to say letters to the knees again, or belt to the knees, or you know, belly button to the knee, whatever it is, and they have the technology, and they still need to perfect it a little bit more, but they have the technology to make it so that Aaron Judge's strike zone is Aaron Judge's strike zone, and Jose Altuve's strike zone is Jose Altuve's strike zone. They do have that. And if, you know, you want to give an inch or two off the edges, you can do that. But again, it's, again.
So is this satellite? I mean, how do we?
Apparently it's the same or similar technology as the Pitch FX stuff that we have right now. Okay. Which is, you know, somewhat already in place. It's just a matter of being able to perfect it a little bit more.
I would like to know the pros and cons, because there has to be some cons to it. I mean, where are they getting the instantaneously feed from? Or is that fast? And is there ever going to be a problem that arises where it doesn't register or something like that? So we can't have those type of situations occurring during a major league ball game.
You're right. You're right. And again, to that point, and I totally agree with you, we've seen a couple of times hitters, we say, breaking StatCast, where home runs aren't registered. And we've become so accustomed to a home run. Oh, how hard was it hit? How far was it hit? And you could see where it lands. You know, it wasn't hit 6,000 miles. You can see where it lands. And then for some reason, it doesn't register on StatCast. So, you know, there cannot be those gaps, because it would be that pitch on the edge in the bottom of the ninth of Game 7 of the World Series where the technology somehow fails and it's like, well, do a do-over. Yeah, something tells me we won't be able to have that. So,
oh, that would be just
that would be something bad
for baseball.
That would be something. But anyway, it's a fun debate to have, and whether or not the automated strike zone is. I'm starting to think that we're closer to having it than never having it, I guess. But again, a fun debate to have, and something that, as the game continues to evolve with all the technologies at our fingertips and perfecting them, obviously, is the key. We'll see where we stand with the automated strike zone in the coming years in Major League Baseball.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, and we'll be right back with more after this.
Stay up to date on the latest news as it happens on TuneIn.
From American politics to global events, get live 24/7 coverage with some of the top news media outlets in the world,
including CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio.
And when breaking news hits, TuneIn keeps you updated with up-to-the-minute reports and analysis on the biggest stories of the day.
Thank you for joining us with this breaking news report. Really appreciate it.
Day or night, get live news coverage from around the world on TuneIn.
And now, more of the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by Esurance. Here are your hosts, Paul Severino and LaTroy Hawkins.
There were 11 games on Thursday, and to bring you up to speed on all the action, we've got the best day ever, home run tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever on MLB At The Plate.
All right, so this is where LaTroy and I pick and choose who had the best day ever for pitchers and for hitters. And LaTroy, I go to you first. Your best day ever for a pitcher.
My best day ever, and you know we have to go with my buddy, good friend, Chad Bettis, making his first start since being diagnosed with testicular cancer. 7 innings, 6 hits, no runs, no walks, 2 punch outs, 91 pitches, 63 strikes. Worked his way back from the cancer with some chemotherapy. I mean, just a great, great story for baseball. He's a fighter. He showed us today, and he gave his team a chance to win a baseball game. And he held the Braves scoreless, and his team was able to score 3 runs after he came out of the game.
I absolutely would have gone with him as well, but in the interest of extending the segment, I suppose, I'll go with Trevor Bauer, because you're right. I mean, Chad Bettis was the story of the night for a multitude of reasons, but I will go with Trevor Bauer, who went 6 2/3, 7 hits, 3 earned, a couple of walks, and 11 strikeouts. He picks up his 11th win of the season. And the Cleveland Indians go into Boston for a makeup date. So they're in, they're out, and they pick up a big W as they keep their stranglehold on the lead in the Central. 64 up, 52 down. The Twins idle, so it's up to a 5-game cushion right now for the Cleveland Indians. So Trevor Bauer is my best day ever for a pitcher. For a hitter, who you got?
Best day ever for a hitter. I'm going to have to go with the young 20-year-old out of Boston, Rafael Devers. You know, 2-4 tonight, 2 home runs, 2 RBIs. He's 4 home runs in the month of August so far, .397 on base percentage. The guy is definitely swinging the bat extremely well right now. What he did to the Yankees the night before, and he swung the bat well against a veteran pitcher today. And he's my best day ever for his hitters concerned.
All right, so you went with a guy with a couple of home runs in a losing effort. I'm going to go with a guy with a couple of home runs in a winning effort. Same game, Edwin Encarnacion. He goes 2-for-4, 4 RBIs, his 25th and 26th home runs, helping to pace the Indians to that 7-3 victory that they had in Boston. So that right there, Chad Bettis, Trevor Bauer, and Rafael Devers and Edwin Encarnacion, our two and our two pitchers, two hitters with the best day ever. All right, let's go through it and get to the home run tracker.
MLB at the plate, home run tracker.
All right, so let's begin with the finals, and that's the Cleveland Indians 7-3 over the Boston Red Sox. Mentioned the 2 home runs for Edwin Encarnacion, 25 and 26, and for the Red Sox, 2 for Devers. He's now has 6 on the season. Benintendi also connecting on home run number 17, but again, it's the Tribe with the 7-3 victory over the Boston Red Sox. The Yankees get a 4-2 win over the New York Mets. Home runs from Curtis Granderson, number 18, Yoenis Cespedes, number 15. But it's the New York Yankees also getting home runs from Aaron Judge, his 36th, Aaron Hicks, his 12th, the Hicks home run and the Gary Sanchez home run, Sanchez's 20th, both came in the 8th inning to break the 2-2 tie. Judge tied it at 2 in the 6th, and then Hicks and Sanchez in the 8th. Yanks win 4-2 over the New York Mets. North of the border in Toronto, a 2-1 win for the Toronto Blue Jays, a home run for Wilson Ramos in a losing effort for the Rays, and a 2-run home run in the first inning for Josh Donaldson, his 17th on the season, and that was all the Blue Jays needed. That's all the Blue Jays would get as they pick up the victory again, 2-1 at Rogers Center. The Marlins with an 8-3 win over the San Francisco Giants. Nobody went deep for the Gigantes, but for the Marlins, yet again, the National League Player of the Week, Giancarlo Stanton's 43rd home run of the season, a new single-season franchise mark for the Marlins. 43 did so in the first inning. Marcelo Zuna also homered. He added his 27th of the season, both of those homers off of Ty Block. In Arlington, Texas, the Rangers, a 6-2 win over the Detroit Tigers. Home runs from Justin Upton, his 23rd, and Joey Gallo, his 33rd. That came off of Michael Fulmer, who made his first start off the DL in a couple of weeks. A 3-0 victory for the Rockies over the Atlanta Braves. No home runs, obviously, for the Braves, and nothing across in terms of home runs for the Rockies, but a 3-0 victory. Again, the story there is Chad Bettis. For the Chicago Cubs, they are up big as we speak on the Cincinnati Reds, 15-5 as they play on in the 9th inning. For the Reds, Scooter Jeanette with his 20th home run. And amazing that Scooter Jeanette, 20 home runs. He's had a really good season, a little below the radar, perhaps, because the Reds have struggled, obviously, in the win column this year. Chris Bryant, his 22nd homer of the season. Anthony Rizzo with his 27th. And Javier Baez with his 18th home run off of Scooter Jeanette, in fact, who was pitching in the 8th inning. Obviously, the Reds don't want to go through their entire pitching staff, so they get Jeanette out there. So Jeanette, at the end of the night, he's a push. He hit a home run, and he served up a home run. But it's a zero net gain, I suppose, for Scooter Jeanette. The Cubbies up big right now. In Arizona, it's a 2-0 lead at the moment for the Diamondbacks over the Houston Astros. Zero home runs across for either squad at the moment there. A 6-2 lead for the Kansas City Royals. They play on bottom six in Oakland, and we've got home runs from Cam Gallagher, his first, and it was a big one, a grand slam. His first big league home run is a granny. That is not bad. That's good, clean living, as they say. Again, 6-2 Royals on top. In Seattle, a 7-1 lead for the Baltimore Orioles. Speaking of grand slams, Manny Machado had one to really blow things open in the second inning, but Tim Beckham got the scoring started as he stays red hot with the Baltimore Orioles, his 16th home run of the season. No home runs for the Seattle Mariners against 7-1 right now, top five. Also in the fifth inning in San Diego, the Phillies and the Padres, a home run for Reese Hoskins, also his first career home run. So he and Cam Gallagher will share that day. And nothing across in the terms of the home runs for the San Diego Padres. Now, in terms of the stats for all these, Marcell Ozuna had the furthest home run hit, 456 feet, and a couple of home runs, both leaving the bat at 112 miles an hour. Edwin Encarnacion and Joey Gallo, one of Edwin Encarnacion's two home runs, both at 112 miles an hour. That's your home run tracker on a Monday. How about some stats, statistically speaking?
Statistically speaking.
As we mentioned, Giancarlo Stanton, the first inning home run for him, 43 on the season to pass Gary Sheffield, most in a single season in Marlins franchise history. And Stanton also has more home runs in August than the Pirates and the Rays with 9 and the Phillies with 5. It's unbelievable. I believe he also now has more home runs, and of course, I should have had this in front of me. He's got more home runs than the Giants over a 33-game span. He's got more home runs than an entire team in like a 30-some-odd game span. It's insane. Edwin Encarnacion, 20th multi-home run game in the last five seasons, tied with Giancarlo Stanton for most in the bigs in that span. Rafael Devers joins Ted Williams and Tony Conigliaro as the only Red Sox players to homer in consecutive games. Jeez. Before the age of 21. Not bad at all. Not bad at all for
good company.
Mr. Devers. Yes, I would say so. Also, we've got the Astros and the Diamondbacks beginning their four-game home-and-home series Monday. Tied for the best win-loss record in interleague play this season, each with 9-1 records. Aaron Judge, first home run at Yankee Stadium since the trade deadline, July 31st. He had at least 5 home runs at home in each of his first 4 months of the season. Amazing. Aaron Hicks, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez all hit their 40th career home runs tonight. And I believe, of course, I don't have that in front of me either. Well prepared, Paul. Nice job. Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, one game apart. Sanchez got to 40 career home runs one game quicker than Aaron Judge, but both up there in the top 5 or 6 in baseball history. Astounding starts to their careers for sure. And Manny Machado, 5th Grand Slam in the last 2 seasons, most in Major League Baseball in that span. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you're not only going to hear all the stuff that you heard in this podcast, but also you'll have the chance to listen live to the games and get the action as it happens. For Ryan and Dustin in the LA studio and the Troy Hawkins alongside me, I'm Paul Severino, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. TuneIn, your everything audio app.